Welcome to Words That Move Me, the podcast where movers and shakers like you get the information and inspiration you need to navigate your creative career with clarity and confidence. I am your host, Dana Wilson, and I move people. I am all about the tools and techniques that empower tomorrow's leaders to make the work of their dreams and live a full life while doing it. So whether you're new to the game or transitioning to your next echelon of greatness, you're in the right place. Hello, hello, my friend. Dana here. Welcome to Words That Move Me. I'm jazzed that you are here, and I am jazzed to introduce today's guest, Taylor Wilson, my friends. He is one of Denver's top 40 real estate agents and probably the only real estate agent in Denver who was a bald shampoo salesman and hair model. Oh, and he's my brother. So you already know this episode is an instant favorite. It is a hit. There are lots of laughs and stories for days, but also a lot of gold, some solid wisdom. We kind of dig into and uncover the qualities that make Taylor so good at selling houses. And guess what? Those are also the qualities that make for great dance and choreography careers. There's so much to be learned and applied from this conversation. We talk about creativity and why I don't subscribe to the story that creativity comes like a lightning bolt out of nowhere and can strike at any time. We talk about efficiency and problem solving. And let me tell you, my brother has some very strong problem solving skills, perhaps due to our upbringing. We also have some super strong and super random recollections from our childhood coming at you right now. But first, let's do wins. I have an awesome celebration today. It's a multi-celebration. Today, I'm celebrating having finally applied to be a member of the Television Academy. It is something that has been on my list of things to do for ages. And having John Bogues on the podcast several weeks ago really kicked my butt into gear. Got on the website, did the thing, it took 5 minutes. Would really encourage it if you are eligible. And if there are any TV Academy members listening, I hope you are exercising your ability to vote. And I hope that you consider John's work on blind spotting, season 2, episode 3. I hope you consider that work for outstanding choreography in a scripted program. It truly rocked my world. It is exactly the type of work that I want to see more of in the world. So once again, I've got wins on wins. I did a thing I've been meaning to do, and I am celebrating John Bogues, his work, and shows like Blind Spotting. Shows like Blind Spotting for putting choreography and especially putting people from marginalized groups front and center. This is huge. I hope John and the show are rewarded, because I'm just lit up by it, all of it. Okay, now you go. That's me. That's my win. What's going well in your world? Congratulations. Keep winning. You're really doing it. You're really just out there in the world doing the damn thing. And I'm proud of you. I'm cheering you on from the tiny confines of my tiny podcast booth. All right, let's do this. I can't wait. I can't wait for you to meet my brother. I'm excited for you to get a peek into our past and kind of an idea of why we are the way that we are. Taylor is simply so good. And also there are some really good puns in this episode. Very good puns. So get ready for that. Get ready for more. Enjoy this conversation with the one and only Taylor freaking Wilson. Name that movie.
Clifford.
Nice. That was a visual cue only. I didn't even give a quote and you nailed it. Do you want to know why? Because we're bound genetically, eternally, forever. Tay Tay, welcome to the pod.
With Martin Short.
Martin Short. Clifford, I gave a gesture, you named it. That movie was a staple in our growing up times. How many times do you think we've seen Clifford?
I easily north of 20 times, I'm certain that we lead the pack in views.
Yeah, if there was a Spotify Wrapped for VHS tapes, we would be in the top like 0.01% for Clifford.
Clifford, little Clifford.
Little Clifford. I haven't seen him since the christening. He'd be bigger now. Okay, there's going to be a lot of laughter and us recalling childhood moments together. But there's also a lot of value here. You're my brother. I love you so much. You're the only family member remaining. Well, immediate family member. Remember? Immediate? Wow, I'm too excited. Adrian has been on the podcast. Mom and Dad have both been on the podcast. But to be fair, that's because there are holidays for moms and dads. And I did bonus episodes for holidays. And there's no Brother's Day yet. Huh. So I'm sorry that this took 180 episodes for us to do. But thank you for being here. Welcome to the podcast.
I'll allow it. You're welcome.
Excellent. Okay. I don't think you've ever listened to the podcast. Am I wrong?
This is the first time I've heard it.
Okay.
I can't wait to hear what it's all about.
Well, something that happens in every one of our 170 some plus episodes is that my guests always introduce themselves. I will yield the floor and let you tell us anything you want us to know about you.
Oh, boy, I could go forever. I'm the third Wilson. And...
Baby Wilson.
Yeah, Baby Wilson. My name is Taylor Wilson. I'm the last of the Wilsons on the podcast. So I'm Taylor. I live in Denver, where we grew up. I am a real estate agent, and I wasn't prepared for a
right
intro.
Yeah, it's funny. If you listened to the podcast, you would know that that was coming. But it's whatever. It's fine. It's good. Glad you're here. Let's see. Anything else you want to include there? Like you used to be a dancer or anything like that?
Well, I usually stop there, but that's a good point. So I used to be a dancer. I can remember it a lot, and I'm excited to talk about my dance memories with you.
I'm very excited to hear about your dance memories.
And most people that will listen to this podcast just know me as Dana's brother. So I mean, we can kind of leave it there.
Wow. Well, I think that would be a shame. So let's keep going for at least 45 minutes or so. What I think has always been true about you and is also true about me is that there's an entrepreneur, you know, bone in the Wilson bodies. And you and I got a very early start on business, I would say. We started our first business, DT's Duck Farm. That's for Dana and Taylor, DT's Duck Farm. We started at, how old do you think we were?
God, I must have been five.
Five, which puts me at eight. So eight and five. And how's this for genius? We had had hamsters, right? And I think maybe they had all died. And so we had some surplus hamster food. So what we did with the surplus hamster food is we fed it to the ducks. And
we sold it.
Well, we tried to sell it to the ducks. What we wound up doing is just a lot of labor walking around the lake, throwing away fucking hamster food. But there was a business idea there, which is like, supply and demand, right? The ducks need food. The hamsters don't. We've got food.
Yeah.
We've got it. And that kind of never stopped for us. I think especially you have always really loved money. So you went to business school. What did you learn in business school? Because by the way, I didn't go to business school.
That's a really great question.
Sorry, I didn't tell you that question when I prefaced you with the questions that I would probably ask. Sorry about that.
No, that's okay. And I think that if you talk to a lot of people who went to college, they would give you, I'm sure many of them would give you this answer. And it's that when I was in college, you're just focused on the wrong things. And I would do anything to go back and take those same classes with like the ability to focus that I have now and actually care more about the things. Because I remember doing all these case studies and being like, oh, you know, getting in the way of the life that I want to live during college. But now I'm like, what was it that like recyclable cup company out of Boulder did to grow when they were experiencing like supply chain issues due to, you know, whatever. And I'll tell you what I learned during college.
Tell me.
To back up my computer, because it was the last semester of college. I'd used my black MacBook for all of those years and the whole thing. I opened it up one day and it just had like the gray screen with the folder with a question mark on it. And all of my notes, everything from 4 years of college, never came back. And I would love to read through those notes now. And it's all gone. But I do know that I met a bunch of people who changed me forever into the person I am now, even though I don't use a business degree when I'm selling houses. And I do wonder if I got into selling houses like 6 years earlier, what would it look like today? Mm-hmm. But it wouldn't look like this either, you know, one way or another. But I learned that backing up your computer is really, really critical.
I needed to hear that today. I just had the pop-up when I opened this computer, which I have every time I open up this computer. It says, this device has not been backed up in today. That number is 437 days. And
back it up.
I should. You're right. I've got it. I should. I'm. You know what? After this call, done.
Promise.
You have my word. And my word is my bond. Our word is our bond. Name that movie.
I don't have that one.
No, you do.
Zorro?
No.
And Antonio Banderas?
No, it's closer to home than that.
Princess Bride?
Shaggin' Wagon. Yeah, Harry's on the phone. Yeah, it's Dumb and Dumber. Harry's on the phone with her. You have our word. Our word is our bond. Yeah. Anyways, okay. So let's back up actually a little bit to that 6 years. You said if I had started real estate 6 years earlier. You didn't start real estate 6 years earlier. Why? Because you followed Big Sis out to Los Angeles after you graduated from school. And maybe we shouldn't say that you followed me, but I was there and then you came. So technically, And you had a very different experience of coming to LA than I did. And I would love for you to share it because I think it's important that people hear other than my perspective, what it's like to come to LA. What's it like to move to LA?
I actually look back really fondly on those days and I learned a lot, probably more than I learned in college, but just different stuff.
Right, right.
And those were 3 years that I was pretty unhappy, but looking back now, I'm like, oh, that was so exciting.
Look at you bright siding this. Look at you. We are related. I recall that time for you as being really, really tough. You had two different jobs, you valeted cars at a fancy, hotel down in West Hollywood. And if I recall correctly, two times they bankrupt before you got like paid. Is that true?
Yeah. So let me give you like the abbreviated version. And it goes back to when I had a little bit more hair and I was a hair model. You remember this?
Yes, I do remember that. But for the record, for those, this is an audio medium, so they can't tell. Bald is a cue ball, this one.
Yeah, super bald. Started losing my hair when I was, sometime in college. And you remember our parents had a rule, couldn't move to California unless you had a job out in California. And so somehow I got this job as a male model with thinning hair. There was a Craigslist posting for like male guys with thinning hair needed for some model call.
This is so rich. Yes.
Yeah. So fun. And they sold this cosmetic product that made it look like you were not thinning. 70% of the users were actually women who were more self-conscious about thinning hair than men are, because men, it's a little bit more socially acceptable to be balding. But it really worked. And the photos ended up in
Sky Mall.
Like Sky Mall, yes, but also like beauty supply stores, beauty supply magazines. And then I'm sure we'll get there, but I started working in the beauty industry selling hair products, which again is funnier if you can see me. But I will still get like a text message every once in a while from some, you know, stylist that I talked to a decade ago with a picture from their local beauty supply store somewhere in the United States. And they're like, is this you?
And it is. It is you. I'm going to track that photo down. We're going to include it in the show notes, a link to that. Okay, so that's right. That's what brought you out. Thank you for reminding me. You've always been like, I use this phrase when I try to explain you and Dad, actually, and me to an extent. But there's this trait, this Wilson thing, that's like, we are, no matter where we are, glad to be there. You know what I mean? And that's true of you. I think it makes you a great salesperson because you're in you're at the hair salon. You don't have no reason to be there other than to make money. Balding up front. What is this guy doing here? Unless, listen, you walk in and you're glad to be there. You're at the gym. You just got your ass kicked. You're glad to be there. You know, you're at a dinner party. You know, nobody, glad to be there. You're at Justin Timberlake's concert and nobody cares about you. They only care about your sister. Glad to be there. Oh my God. Speaking of which, I just told the story about you coming out to visit on tour during tour. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. This story is terrifying. Do you remember? You know the story I'm about to tell?
Yeah. Do you know the game where you tell people two truths and a lie?
Yes.
This one always makes it in there for me.
Nice. Nice. Okay. Yeah.
The truth that always gets people is that the first time I got drunk, I threw up on Justin Timberlake's tour bus.
Fact.
And no one will believe it, right? Like, that's got to be a lie. Nope.
Truth.
That's the truth.
I just remember your little Air Force One sticking out of the bathroom, just like on the ground, like the witch from Wizard of Oz, just like destroyed. You were so done. And here's the thing. You're not allowed to deuce or any solid waste on a tour bus. This is a big no-no. So you had to make it up to our tour bus driver. Do you remember how you did that?
Yeah. So I remember you letting me know, like right upon arrival, hey, so happy to have you here. And I was happy to be there. And you're like, all right, rule number one for this 2-week trip that you're going to join us for, no number twos on the tour bus. I was like, no solid waste on the tour bus. It's number one only. And I was like, listen, that's going to be pretty easy for me. I follow those types of rules really well. I'm a night one energy kind of guy. And I remember I was out there with Mike Riccio.
Yes. Oh, shout out Mike. Oh, I miss you.
Just love. And he kind of like took me like kind of little brother type of style. He was like, all right, because he's, I don't know how much older than me he is, but you know, enough to be like, similar in age.
He's actually, I think we're the same age. So he's, yes, exactly your big brother.
Yeah. And it was Europe. So I was 18 and I could drink, and it was German beer, which, you know, is just like a little heartier, a little heftier,
and
bigger.
Comes
in bigger cups. And my night one energy just could not be contained. Yep. I probably measured on the Richter scale for just excitement, and drank so much beer, got on the tour bus after the show, and I remember getting into the bathroom being like, you can't number two, or, well, it's not number two, it's
number three.
you can't do it. But I wasn't driving anymore. The lights were on, but no one was home, and I was just devastated. Oh. And I was sick the whole drive. Wherever we drove to, I was still in the bathroom when we got there, and you had to carry me through the lobby, threw up in the trash can by the elevators.
Oh my God, that's right. You threw up in the lobby at the hotel as well. So you were full, my friend. You were very full.
I'm so sorry.
For the record, for the listeners, this actually is not the story I was going to recall. I was going to tell our border crossing story. You don't remember. What was the story you just remembered?
Run it back with that one. That's better. I'm going to let that whole piece out of there.
No, perfect. Okay, do you remember, I think we were leaving Amsterdam and going into wherever was next and sharing a border. And We got pulled over by customs. I mean, you have to stop at customs, but it was, I don't think it was the middle of the night, so that's dramatic, but I want to say it was the middle of the night. We were not prepared. A officer and a dog got on the bus and started smelling around. And I'm just going to share with you that there are a handful of dancers on that tour. This is the Future Sex Love Show tour that love to smoke and have a good time. And we're leaving Amsterdam. Was there stuff on the bus? 100%. Did I know it? Yep. Did you know it? Probably not. But the officers came on the bus and the dogs were sniffing around. And then officer asked everybody to go to the front lounge of the bus. And they said, if anybody knows of any illegal substances on this bus, and you say something now, we'll let you go. But if you say there's nothing on the bus and we find something, you're all detained. And I'm like, my brother hasn't even graduated high school yet. What are we gonna do? I was so mad. I was like staring everybody down with daggers in my eyes. But what did I do?
What'd you do?
Nothing. I was quiet as a clam. Is that how that saying goes? They don't have a larynx. Quiet as a mouse. Nobody said anything. The officer and the dog got off the bus. Eddie put a full blunt into a Coke can and drank it all. I don't know how that went down. Other things got hidden in cheese. Other things got thrown away. I think several things got eaten that shouldn't have been eaten in such quantities. But by the time officer and dog came back, they didn't find anything and we passed. I am sweating just telling that story. I was so, so nervous and didn't want you to get in trouble. Felt so responsible for you. Even after your first night when it had been proven that there was nothing I could do to protect you entirely. But oh my God, that was terrifying. I just told that story, recalled that story recently.
I had forgotten about that story. It didn't make an impression on me quite like it did on you.
I guess not.
Also, one of the things I remember, you know how crafty mom is. Mom just loves making clothes, right?
Or making anything. Yeah.
And she and I
made a shirt. You made a t-shirt.
Yeah, we made with stencils and like kind of, I think it was like some type of a spray painty type of deal. A shirt that said Justin Who? ? And I wore it to the concert.
Oh, you were wearing it when you met him for the first time. I recall this. He thought that was quite funny.
Yeah. Justin Who?
Strong first impression, brother.
Yeah.
Strong. So, okay, that was a fun tour time. I'm happy to get to share those kind of experiences with you. But that must have kind of informed your decision to move to LA, because that was before you moved out. You were just fresh out of high school. Then you went to college. Then you moved to LA. You had this like kind of tough experience finding work, finding a calling, and then somebody fully took advantage of you, like one of your bosses, terrifying story about someone using your credit card for business expenses and insane. I don't want to overshare if that's not something you want to talk about, but.
Oh, no, I'll talk about all of that. I look back at everything. It's just like I sharpened my teeth in a million different ways. So I wanted to go out to LA because, number one, you were there. But two, I watched a lot of Entourage in college. And I was like, I can
hysterical.
So fun. And get out there, convince parents that it's okay because I'm a hair model. But in reality, that job paid $300 a day once a month, maybe. And so I started valeting cars at the Farmer's Daughter on La Brea.
Uh-huh.
It was right across from the Grove. And the I don't know, I remember it was like $10 an hour plus tips, and the paychecks would always bounce. So the $10 an hour, the paychecks would never get through.
No.
And what's worse, when you deposit a check that bounces, they charge you.
Right.
And I didn't have any money. Yeah. But the tips were okay, and they would always promise, like, oh, we're going to, we'll put it on the next paycheck. And for the record, it was kind of a third party that hotel hired that we worked for. It wasn't that hotel that didn't pay us, just in case they're listening. Whatever. Worked valet for a little while. The cash tips were good and they got me through stuff. And then I found, yeah, an internship for PR, which I was like, I don't know, let's try that. Maybe that's me. And I got suckered into, I was just young and dumb, and I didn't spot really quickly that this person was just a total scam.
Listen, this is the flip side of the happy to be here coin. The flip side of happy to be here is happy to help. And sometimes we help people who are strictly, explicitly there to take advantage of us. 100%. Keep going.
That's a really good takeaway. The flip side of happy to be here is the happy to help. And when you're too happy to help, sometimes you get taken advantage of.
Yep.
And it's a bummer. But I forget where I was talking about this. You can't just like live your life thinking that the world is going to take advantage of you. You got to assume the best in people. And sometimes it doesn't work out, but most of the time it probably will. But this time it didn't work out at a pretty bad time for me. So, you know, I was fresh out of college, not making much money. The student loans were $1,000 a month. Rent in California, I don't remember what it was, but it was more than I had. I didn't have a car. I had a scooter that was dope. But I ran out of money, had to sell the scooter. Oh. And at the worst time, I show up to my internship and the person I'm working for is like, oh, my car's in the shop. We got to go rent a car today. So we go down to the rental place and my employer gives their credit card and ID to the enterprise. And the enterprise says, oh, these don't match. So we can't rent you a car. Your credit card, your ID don't match. We can't rent you a car. And I was employee number one. I wanted to be employee of the month. And I was like, you know what? I have a credit card and an ID that match. Use these.
Oh my God. And
so they did. And sometime during the week that we had a Mercedes rental car that I wasn't in possession of, I called Dad.
Yeah.
And I was like, Dad, I think something is wrong. I'm just like, I was blind 5 days ago and now I see. And it's one of the only times I can remember Dad, I don't want to say like disciplining me, but he was really disappointed and didn't really hide it.
Ooh.
I remember, I think it was definitely the first time that I remember and the last that I remember.
Ooh.
He was like, son, what are you thinking? And that one stung. And it just like, it was kind of like a slap.
Yeah.
Over the phone. And I regained consciousness. And the next day I did what I could to go get the car back, but it had been towed. And fast forward a little while and, you know, I think $1,000 or $2,000 later, we got the car returned, but I was the furthest away from having $2,000 to blow on someone else's rental car. And so I learned a lot there. I'm sure some other things happened for a little while. And then I settled in a job at a production company for a while as the assistant to the international sales division. And just, I don't know, I was young enough that I didn't know what $30,000 a year meant in terms of biweekly pay. And it wasn't enough to pay my student loans and rent. So everything else at that time kind of just went on a credit card and I would pay it off after I did a hair modeling job. But I had an experience that made me feel like this industry takes a lot from the people who are willing to give it. And it wasn't worth it for me. I didn't feel like I was helping create something that was worth the pain that I was going through. And I think that one probably lasted about a year. I got to do some cool travel with it. And I just learned.
Like Cannes Film Festival?
Yeah, Cannes Film Festival. That was really fun. Berlin Film Festival, freezing cold. But as I look back on it, good experiences in learning what you don't want to.
Right. I love that. What were your thoughts and feelings about moving home? When you finally did, you moved back to Denver, were you excited about it? Were you hesitant? Did you feel defeated? What was that beat?
I had just gotten into it, like kind of a different good groove with a, this is when I got into the beauty supply world as a bald man selling hair products. Do you remember this? I worked for a company called Cosmoprof and I did outside sales in like the Long Beach to Downey type of area.
Oh yeah, you were like top salesperson in the Western, in their whole like Western hemisphere. Maybe
one of the moons. I don't know.
Okay.
But I'm starting to have like a good time and starting to like make more money than I had made doing valeting cars, obviously, and anything else that I had done out there. And I was starting to, outside sales in general, like you got to have a little bit of a runway and then you start to get some traction and you're moving and grooving. And I was in a good place, but my girlfriend then, now wife, wasn't in a very good place. She was getting run over trying to build her hair business out mm-hmm. there and spending 2 hours in traffic between West Hollywood and I think it was Manhattan Beach mm-hmm. each way.
Oof.
Just getting to the salon.
Not for me.
It wasn't sustainable.
Yeah, that's not for anyone. Yeah.
No. We were both probably drinking a lot and not spending enough energy on ourselves or each other. And I didn't feel defeated. I felt like I had a good run. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed the time I spent out there. I loved walking up and down Sunset Boulevard and mm-hmm. looking at like the cars and walking my dog and doing a bunch of stuff. I thought it was awesome.
Yeah. I drive by your old place and I smile. I think very fondly of that spot and picking you up on Sunset and going to spin class at 6 a.m. Shout out Tevye. We love you. Tevye, also previous podcast guest. I will link to that episode because we talk about a laugh attack that you and I had in her class where we thought we were going to be kicked out. Like dad kicked us out of the car. Do you remember that? Dad kicked us out of the car for having a laugh attack.
I know exactly where we were.
Oh my God. I love that story. Dad just had this threshold, right? And it was sneaky too, because he's kind of a selective listener. So you think he's not listening and then all of a sudden he's listening. He's mad. And we were at a point, we were past the point of no return. You can't just quiet down at that level. So you and I have the capacity to really come undone. and unfortunately that happened once in a very high stakes spin class. And once in the back of dad's car. Yeah.
Spin classes with Tevye is probably the number one most valuable and most like shaping part of
Let's talk about
that
it.
3 years.
What the hell? She's magical.
That's the closest thing I've ever had to church. And I'm not alone in that. I'm sure everyone who was part of that group at that time
yes.
would agree.
I pray to Tevye Selle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I just pray she's not disappointed in me ever.
I'm so afraid. Okay, I want to talk a little bit about your dance days because we kind of glazed by that at the beginning. And first of all, let's just clock that mom had 3 kids in dance at one point. That ain't cheap. We competed. Wow. You had costumes. You played Austin Powers in our production number. You had a frilly lace cravat.
Dad made me a tooth implant thing. Do you
Our
remember
dad,
this?
Oh my God, dad is a dentist. Oh my God, I do not remember that. That's right. You got impressions done and he made you a fake bridge, like busted ass teeth. Oh, wow. Yeah. Overachievers.
And mom probably made the costumes.
She sure did make the costumes. What?
Yeah, I remember.
Keep going.
I probably did a bunch of dances during those years, but I remember a few select ones.
Yeah, hit me.
Austin Powers was a production number, right? That was the whole studio.
Yeah.
And then
one of the senior girls, Amber, sat on your lap during that. And she was like she was like really cool, really pretty. And you like sat on one knee and she sat on your lap and you would blush.
It was a big deal.
It was a big deal. Keep going.
The other ones I remember, it was with my company, my age group, was Mambo Number 5.
Oh, wow. You did do Mambo Number 5 with Sam Lips, right? Sam was in that.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. Wow, what a great song. I can hear it right now. I can literally hear it right now.
And then I don't think I remember any other of the individual dances, but I remember a couple of Nicole Carr's Across the Floor routines.
Tell me. Show me.
Remember the warm-up routine? I'm not going to show you, but it was a warm-up routine for hip-hop Wednesday nights, 8 p.m.
Yes.
It was Beep Beep, Who Got the Keys to the Jeep song.
Room. Yes, Missy Elliott, obviously, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And it was like, you hop on the right foot and then you kind of like bounce twice. And then you did some type of a 360 spin. And then you kind of slid twice to the right, slid twice to the left across the floor.
I come home for Adri's birthday this weekend, we're going to do it. We're going to make a video. We're going to send it to Nicole. That is so cool. I love that. I love that.
We get to do one better. Nicole's going to be there.
Shut it. We're doing an across the floor at the venue. And by the venue, I mean it's a restaurant. We're going to have to clear some tables. This is it. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for saying that. So our family, yeah, we have a penchant for performance. If you can't tell, we're not afraid of performing or of being the center of attention. We love family performance opportunities. So if anybody's looking to book a family band, or dance group, or needs to buy a house, reach out to us. We're going to need a family email address.
You said something there that struck a chord that I talk about a lot to myself.
Family band.
I love, the family band, but I do really love the spotlight. And that probably came from dancing at a young age. And because when you're like one of the guy dancers ever, even if you suck, which I was not great, everybody celebrates you.
Yeah.
Right. And everybody's always looking at you because you're like the one of the two guys in the big group of people. And that's never left. I still love the spotlight.
Nice.
And I'm still when dancing, I'm about one count, 0.75 to one count late.
Yes.
On anything.
Yeah.
And I just wish someone would have told me back when I was dancing that, hey, if you're just one count behind all the time.
Just go one count faster. We're just going to call it a really deep pocket. A really deep pocket. This is what I'm finding in my more mature dancing age, is that I do find myself towards the end of the count. If the count were a half pipe, I'm very deep / almost at the come up of the next count. And I think it's endearing. I would rather you be late than early. Oof, it's the worst to be early. It's the worst to be early. You would way rather be late.
I think late looks lazy.
Well, yeah, sort of, I guess that's kind of my point, but late better than early. Too excited. Not good. It gives away the surprise.
Yeah, we might just have to feel differently on that one. I think if you're early, you could make everyone else look late.
Wow. You just blew my mind. Just blew my mind right
but
open.
But if you're late, if you're the one that's late, everybody knows, like, oh, they missed it.
You know, it's true. Marty's big advice to me, or I learned it through him anyways. Early is on time. On time is late, and late is fired. So I suppose you're right. At least you and Marty align, two key figures in my life. So I suppose two out of three. All right. I'll join you on that. Are there any other qualities that you think dance bestowed upon you or ingrained in you at that ripe age of whatever it was, like 10 to 12?
You know, I didn't know it then, but I know it now as an older person, is just the value of flexibility.
Oh.
And movement in general, and how it keeps you healthy. I have recently gone through, I don't want to call them health issues, but just like a lot of body pain in a lot of places where you're just like, why does my shoulder hurt? I haven't been using this. And my wrists, what about these wrists? Through a bunch of different appointments, what I've learned is that it is 100%, I just wasn't stretching.
Oh.
And my body was rejecting my lack of stretching, and it was starting to punish me for it. So I think one of the things to take away there is just the value of stretching.
Good. Simple. Great note. Yeah. Thank you. Ready for the next question?
Yeah.
This is a toughie. Who's mom's favorite?
So mom's favorite is it's you.
I disagree. I disagree. No, I disagree.
I'll tell you why. Is because nothing lights mom up like when someone makes her feel really important or VIP.
Oh, yeah.
And when she goes and she hangs out with you, she goes to the VIP places and she does the VIP things and she meets the VIP people. And she comes home on top of the world, right? Like her recent thing with you when she was in the music video.
Yeah, for Jason Mraz, for Megan Lawson choreographed, yes.
Yeah, big deal.
Big deal.
And
it was huge. That was very cool.
Making people feel important is important.
Whoa.
And listen, I don't think anybody can help mom do that like you can.
Listen, that might be the trifecta. That is the other, I think we get that part from mom, actually. She's very good at making people feel important. That's why she was one of the easiest people to bring around on tour, because she could talk to anybody about what they do and genuinely care and genuinely be listening and ask questions and make somebody, some backline crew guy, feel like what they do is the most important thing on the road. And she, I mean, obviously she felt that way about wardrobe. I would have to pull mom out of the wardrobe room. She could talk to our dressers and our wardrobe team actually all day and night. But anybody, she could talk to anybody about, so what do you do? Oh, that's incredible. That must be really hard. How'd you learn how to do that? How long have you been doing that? What's the hardest thing about it? And she should have a podcast. This is where I get it. I mean, she gives it, maybe also because she was a flight attendant, for anybody who doesn't know my mom and hasn't listened to her episode, which is fantastic. She was a flight attendant for how many years, TT?
I think it was from 1972 when she was 18 to, when did she retire? Like
10 years ago?
10 years ago. So probably, let's see, 2023 minus 10, 31, 2013. 72 to 2013.
Oh, yeah.
40 years?
Yeah. 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 And I remember she used to joke. She used to say that, like, a flight attendant is a bartender, a babysitter, a therapist, a cook, a, you know, all the things. And I think part of what made her job move smoothly is being friendly and being, again, happy to be there. But what she would talk to people, and travel is not fun. I don't know about y'all, but I am a disaster when I travel. I'm not myself. I'm not myself. I'm short. I'm cold. I don't mean physically. I mean, like, I'm crass. I'm not warm. She really warms people up. I bet traveling for mom was traveling on mom flight would be the one. Why do you keep writing? What do you keep writing things?
I am taking notes of things that pop into my mind that I want to no longer have them exist in my mind. I want them to exist on this paper right here so I don't forget them. And it allows my mind to re-engage
with
you.
Right. I can't wait to hear what's on that list at the end of this call. Okay. So here's what it is. From I don't know who, we get the happy to be here. From somebody else, we get the happy to help. I don't think that's dad. but I think on both fronts, especially mom heavy though, we get the, you know, the understanding of the importance of letting people know that they are important. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's, I think one of the things that make you and I good people. Mm-hmm.
Is it what makes you good at what you do now? What makes you good at selling houses? Because P.S., my brother is crushing it. You're crushing it. What was it? You and your firm closed on a house every single day in April?
I think we might have. But we do, on average, like a house every 3 days. There's seven of us.
Between seven people.
Yeah. Yeah. And we all love each other. And we are all each other's biggest cheerleaders. And
that's awesome.
Celebrate each other's successes and listen to each other's hard days, and it's just the best group. I love it more than anything. Being happy to be there is a really important quality, because people just want to be around people who are happy.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
I think the most important qualities, probably problem solving.
Yes.
Like at the beginning of the day, I don't know, I've probably got a list of all the problems that I know I need to solve, and then that list just doubles throughout the day. And at the end of the day, all of those have to be resolved. And there's no letting it be or letting it remain or maybe hang out for like maybe a day, sure, but every problem has a solution. And that's just the framework that I operate in. Mm-hmm. And I love it. It's really satisfying. I'm really good at just like there, whatever the problem is with whatever the thing is, right? Like there's a break in the sewer line. There's a roof that we need replaced by tomorrow. There's, you know, people who don't see eye to eye on this one thing. Just there is a presentation of words from me to whoever's listening that will get what needs to be done, done. I just need to figure out what the words are. And I'm really good at it.
Oh, you know why I love this so much, Tay-Tay? I love this because my definition of creativity is problem solving.
It's the best.
I think this thought that like creativity is like lightning and it strikes you and you out of nowhere have this idea. I don't fully subscribe to that. I think creativity usually most of the time, 99% of the time, comes from there being a problem that needs solving. And that's when creativity enters the chat.
Yeah. It's really romantic to pretend that you just get struck by solutions or by creativity or these things. And it happens in movies, but in real life, it's a muscle in your brain that you just flex all the time.
Yes. And you're so good at it.
My team is really, really good at it.
Nice.
Just problem solving. And I find it really exciting to find in other people. When you find someone who's just a really good problem solver instead of a really good like problem haver.
Yeah.
Or, you know, people who just like have a bunch of problems.
Yeah.
I'm like, at the end of the day, pretty much at the end of every day, like by end of the day, I mean like end of business. I've got no problems. They're all done.
Woo!
And tomorrow brings a new set of problems, but in the meantime, that's it.
I love that.
So problem solving is pretty critical. Oh, you know what I think everybody in our family is really good at?
Tell me.
Is a little bit of self-deprecating humor.
Totally. It's disarming.
A little bit of jokes. Yeah, yeah. Bringing down the wall.
Yeah.
Disarming. I'm pretty good at making somebody feel at least marginally comfortable around me pretty quick, regardless of like where we are, what the setting is, what their background is, what, you know, it doesn't matter if we're at a, whatever, pick your own polarizing item. And the two polarizing groups, put me in either one of those fundraisers and I'll make friends talking about whatever they want to talk about.
Yeah.
And making fun of myself for some reason or another.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, really important in this job because you just need to be good at having quick relationships.
Wow. That's very self-aware, dude. I would co-sign on that.
And then these are actually some of the things that I wrote down on my piece of paper because they popped into my head and I didn't want to.
Yeah, that was my last question. I was just going to ask what's on the paper.
The last one is being able to switch gears really quickly. I think it's also a mental skill that you
because you put it on a piece of paper. So you'll switch gear back to it. Wait, well, go back. You know, sorry, I hijacked that.
You can be solving this problem on the phone over here and maybe you'd resolve it. Maybe it doesn't get resolved just yet, but then you put that phone down and you get up on a call or a meeting with a different problem. And I'm really, really good at shifting gears and getting on to the next thing and giving it 100% of my mental focus. And I think that's really important, especially with the volume of deals that the team does, the variety of issues that we have and the variety of people that we work with, it just ranges so greatly that it's important to be able to shut one conversation off, jump into another, make that person feel really, really important and succeed in that. Oh, and that's one of the other things is making people feel important. I am annoying to a bunch of people because I always have my phone on me and I am an instant text backer. And it's one of the things, Hevia was also an instant text backer.
Oh my God.
And the reason I love it is because I think it makes people feel important when when they get that instant response. Nothing gets me going like when I text somebody and they hit me back right away with an answer.
Oh, God. Yeah, I'm with you. And actually, I'm in a tight spot right now because there's a couple non-quick texters in my life at the current. That's frustrating to me.
Yeah. And it requires giving up some other parts of your life, right? Like, I'm not a very aware driver.
Dude, you gotta stop that. You can have it with you, but I mean, Tay.
I know, I say that in jest. I rented a Tesla last week to see what it's like. And it's like driving an iPhone.
It really is.
They're so good.
Yeah.
And that little autopilot deal, I like it.
Well, yes, it's safe and it's dangerous if you're about to be fully engaging in conversations behind the wheel. I'm not a fan. But I am a fan of quick communication. I think you and I both really prioritize efficiency. We like being efficient. And I think it helps people to make plans when, if you have an answer, you give it. That being said, if you become an immediate responder, which is slightly different than a first responder, it can really, it's a good thing you're a task switcher, because if I responded to every text immediately all day, I would get nothing done because everything I'm doing would be interrupted by having to correspond with somebody. So there is a balance, right? For me, it's like, I don't know, I've kind of gotten into this habit not to talk like nuts and bolts of how schedule and how schedule and my way of being productive works. But for the most part, if you text me out of the blue with a request for a hang, it's not happening this week. On Sunday, when I make my schedule for the next week, if there's space available, you can go onto it. So those type of texts, like my least favorite, hey, what's up? Want to grab coffee? I'd love to pick your brain. Deprioritized. Just so you all know, listening out there in the world, deprioritized. Urgent things and people that are close to me get the priority response. Otherwise, yeah, that's going to probably happen in a week. Period.
I get those texts too, but they're for different reasons. Same reason, but just a different text from a different type of like vendor for me. And I have the same response. The response is, I do not have time for you to pick my brain. I do have 15 minutes between appointments while I'm driving.
Right.
And I would love to help you get to where you need to be by sharing something that's in my head that'll help you get there. Mm-hmm. And I think it is something to note, especially for anybody listening that's just like, I don't know, building their dance career or building their real estate career, is just know your audience a little bit, right? Like, probably Dana Wilson is like, I don't know, I'm just going to guess she's busy. And an hour out of your day, probably an hour and a half or 2 hours if you count like time to drive to a coffee shop, I just don't have it. And if I did have it, I'd be napping.
Facts. You know what it is for me too, is I don't need the coffee part. That's such a distraction. Makes it take too long. You don't have the money to treat me to coffee most of the time, not you specifically, but the person climbing and the person wanting to pick my brain. I've got quite expensive taste in coffee. Matter of fact, actually, it's my taste and my palate is quite ranging. I kind of love Chock Full of Nuts. Mom got me on that instant coffee. It's like camp coffee, so good. Anyways, that's a thing. I actually put an item in my store that says I'm morally opposed to you picking my brain, but you can virtually buy me coffee. And if the thing that you want to talk about hasn't been discussed on the podcast, I will have a Zoom with you for $10.
I love that.
Like, let's go. That's one of the reasons I made the podcast, is because having those conversations 170 times versus I could have them once. I could have 175 of them publicly. And the next time somebody asks me to talk about a thing, I just say, oh my God, yeah, that's episode 75.
It is one of, I think, my partner and I's values is efficiency. Mm-hmm. All the time. Just mm-hmm. how can this be faster?
Well, Yes, so you should start a podcast, then you'll learn a lot about efficiency. Because in theory, on the big picture, having a podcast is really efficient, right? I can say, oh yeah, I've done a podcast about that. Here's the link. But ask Riley Higgins, who's on the other side of this call. Nothing about a weekly podcast is efficient. It takes a lot of time and a lot of hard work, a lot of coordination. So I do recommend it, though. And you should have one. You're really good at this. Just personable, easy to talk to, enjoy learning. Yeah, period. What would you do if I brought you here to just take over my podcast? If at the end of this, I was like, by the way.
Immediately rebrand.
Impressive.
As a real estate podcast.
Yeah. I bet some of my audience would carry over, would follow you along.
So, but there is there's a little bit there. So during COVID, we had to switch our team meetings to Zoom meetings and still cover a bunch of stuff and provide value to the team and teach them things that Sarah and I have learned and gone through, and we recorded all of them. And what we found is like there's a lot of value in these recordings. And I actually don't kind of like, as one of the two leaders of this team, part of the value that I give to the people who are willing to be on my real estate team is the information that we talk about weekly, mm-hmm. now in our physical team meetings that we have in person, but that we used to do on Zoom and record. And it's a little bit of the value that I have to give. And if someone's willing to be on my team, I don't really want to share that with just anybody. I want to share it with the people who are willing to give me their, you know, like their time and their commitment and their allegiance to working under this brand. And mm-hmm. they are the ones who deserve like the nitty gritty stuff that I know on how to get it done. And
oh,
so I'm really
exclusive.
Happy to give it to them. I just think that there's more value to the people on the team if the stuff that I have to share isn't just out there for everybody.
Interesting.
Not that there's really, and anybody in any industry will tell you, like there's really no secret sauce to like getting rich quick or
right.
being successful super fast. It is really just like, oh, it is hard work all
yeah.
the time.
Yeah.
But the specific systems and like maybe little shortcuts that we have to share, or bits of wisdom or knowledge, I really want it to be shared with people who are also giving back to what I'm trying to build.
I hear that. I love that. Actually, that reminds me of a quote. I think I've read it on the podcast before, but I'm going to read it again. It's Ray Kroc, the creator, I think the CEO, I might have his title wrong. He's the guy that made McDonald's, Ray Kroc, KROC. He says, "Press on. Nothing in the world can take the place of persistence. Talent will not. Nothing in the world is more common than unsuccessful men with talent. Genius will not. Unrewarded genius is almost a proverb. Education will not. The world is full of educated derelicts. Persistence and determination alone are omnipotent." And I think... Yeah.
Forward me that, because I've got a call after this and I'm going to need to pay a little bit of that.
Yeah, you got it. The good old Ray Kroc via Van Neistat and 10 Bullets, Tom Sachs's film 10 Bullets, which I'm obsessed with. And yeah, those words, I keep it on my desktop. I keep that quote open because it's A, true, and B, it's just like, oh, what a perfect reminder. You are persistent, my friend, and you are determined. You're happy to be here. You're happy to help. You know the value of telling people that they're important. I'm so grateful to call you my sibling. I'm so grateful that you're here today for sharing. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And man, I can't wait for this weekend. We're going to have a really good time dancing across the floor at Vinyl in Denver. If anybody's around on, what is it, May 29th?
Memorial Day, whenever that one is.
May 29th. We will be at Vinyl downtown, private event. So you're going to have a password. What's the password?
Boogie Woogie.
I love it. You could use Boogie Woogie or you could use Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy of Company B. That also is acceptable.
Okay, that's a really, really good way to wrap it up.
Yeah.
I did a solo dance to Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy,
sixth
grade elementary school. And there was no choreography to it. I winged it. And what that meant,
is that a pun? Were you wearing tap shoes? Did you actually do wings?
No, it wasn't.
It's a very good song for a tap solo.
It was part of our Christmas decoration.
You had a fake trumpet. Oh my God. Yes, I remember this.
Yeah. And somewhere out there in the world is a videotape of this.
Of
I'm
you
sure.
freestyling to probably Bette Midler singing, yeah. Oh, that is a solid way to end. I'm going to keep that on my eyelids for the rest of the night.
Mm-hmm. I was proud of it. And you know what move was my favorite move? Oh. I did it for probably 30 seconds of the dance.
Tell me.
Corkscrews.
Oh, coffee grinders. Yeah. Some people call them corkscrews. Sure. Oh, yeah. You were sick with it. You caught so much momentum. I thought you might take off. Those might become airborne.
Yep.
Yeah. The right side. That was your side.
Yeah. The right hip's always been a little bit more limber.
Yeah. Well, with that, go stretch your hips, please. Give your beautiful wife a big hug from me. I love you, Lurla. Her name is Laura, but Lurla. Thank you again. You're the shit.
Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. We'll have you on. We'll listen. Whatever. I'll see you later.
See you later.
All right, let's recap, my friend. The things that make a Wilson a Wilson. Number one, a penchant for business. Y'all, DT's Duck Farm was a real thing. I remember etching, like trying to make us a logo in colored pencil in one of my notebooks. Just the best. Here's what's up. The things that make a Wilson are also the things that make for good business people, and they make for great problem solvers, which is to say these qualities also make for great creatives, because I really do believe creativity is simply problem solving. So here's what I took away from this episode. What makes a Wilson is this quality of being happy to be here no matter where we are. Also happy to help, which as Taylor so kindly illustrated. I was there and I wanted to hurt the people that took advantage of my brother. The position that he talked about it from was very mature and very, very, very optimistic, very cool, calm, and collected. Anyways, there's this thing, this happy to helpness that also makes for, being easily taken advantage of. And I'm sorry for some of the things that happened to my brother, but also look at how he turned out. Was it all for a good cause? I don't know. It's hard to say. A third quality is this definitely handed down from Stan, aka Stephanie, aka our mom, is this understanding of the importance of letting people know that they are important. It comes so naturally to my mom. It comes naturally to my brother. I think I have it too. It's this ability to see the good in something, and this, you know, call it humility, call it stupidity, call it whatever you want, but this ability to just give compliments and do it sincerely and do it for real from the heart. My mom is so good at it. My brother's good at it. I think I have it too. That's a big one. But also, let's not forget the ability to switch gears and be a taskmaster, to switch mindsets. You heard my brother taking notes in the middle of the episode. I think that helps. There's also persistence and determination. Thank you, Ray Kroc. Huge, huge deal. Okay, that's my recap. I hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. I hope you keep lists of what's on your mind so that you can be present with the person you're with, especially if that person is yourself. I also hope that you text people back immediately, at least some of the time. And I hope that you stretch today and every day. Mostly, though, I hope that you go out there, get into the world, and keep it funky. I will talk to you soon. This podcast was produced by me with the help of many. Music by Max Winnie. Logo and brand design by Brie Reitz. And big thanks to Riley Higgins, our executive assistant and editor. Also, massive thanks to you, the mover who is no stranger to taking action. So go take action. I will not, cannot stop you from downloading episodes or leaving a review and a rating. I will not ban you from my online store for spending your hard-earned money on the cool merch and awesome programs that await you there. I will 100% not stop you from visiting wordsthatmoveme.com if you want to talk with me, work with me, and make moves with the rest of the Words That Move Me community. Oh, and also, I will not stop you from visiting thedanawilson.com if you're curious about all the things that I do that are not Words That Move Me related. All right, my friend, keep it funky. I'll talk to you soon.